Greetings and welcome to the A-Bod. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm the Dive Mistress.
And we've got a heck of a show today. After a few weeks of watching literally the worst movies that Netflix has to offer, we decided to raise the quality bar a little. And while we weren't entirely successful in that raising, I think we're going to have a show that makes you much less depressed about the state of modern cinema.
Yeah, I really, like, after last week's show, I was in a bad place.
Yeah.
And I just desperately needed to watch something of quality. Or, if not quality, just not so dire.
Run, Bitch, Run really took a lot out of us, I think it's fair to say. I mean, for the love of God, we were going to cover I Spit on Your Grave, the original and the remake, and we have pushed that back indefinitely because of the trauma of Run, Bitch, Run.
Right, so we've got three very different movies this week. But certainly a lot more fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, I mean, spoiler alert, I think any of them, we're probably going to recommend you at least watch it. But you know what? Wait for the real comments about the movie before we get into that stuff.
How is that a spoiler alert?
I know, it's not really a spoiler alert. No, I'm spoiling, there's two kinds of spoiler alerts. Spoiling the plot of the movie and spoiling our reaction to the movie before they hear our actual review.
Oh, okay. So you were spoiling
the AVOD, not the movie. Yes. I was spoiling the AVOD as if people care.
Yeah, I really don't think anyone's going to care.
No, that's. It's not like people are betting on whether or not I liked the A-Team.
No bet.
All right. So let's start talking about some random crap. Do you have any for the show this week, finally, Dive Mistress?
Yeah, I do have a little bit of random crap. And this is very random.
Okay.
I was about to say randomly. I watched a TV show. Randomly. I did. It did happen at random. I ended up watching two episodes of this show called Hyperspace.
Okay, and this is not Hyperspace, the unbelievably tedious show on the Canadian Space Network where people discuss nerdy television and it makes me want to slap them?
No.
Oh, well, thank God.
I didn't know such a thing existed.
Well, don't ever watch it, but anyway, continue.
No, this is Hyperspace.
Okay.
And it's a British sci-fi comedy show.
Oh, like Red Dwarf.
Like Red Dwarf, but less inaccessible as Red Dwarf.
There's a lot of continuity to Red Dwarf, come to think of it.
I never saw Red Dwarf in the beginning, but the few episodes I did see, I didn't really understand what was going on. I didn't think it was all that funny.
Gotcha.
Hyperspace is more, I guess it's sort of like Star Trek. But it doesn't take itself seriously at all.
Okay.
And it's got Nick Frost in it.
Oh, he's funny.
He is funny. And so, like, he's, like, the commander of the spaceship, you know, and he's got his sort of crew of oddballs working for him. And it just, like, it was a good little show. I thought it was really funny. I enjoyed the two episodes that I saw, so
we should absolutely check out
Hyperspace. Yeah, I encourage people to check out Hyperspace. They're half-hour episodes, so it's not a huge time commitment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I, by comparison, watched The Return of Spartacus. As you know, I kind of watched Spartacus last year. I say kind of because I did not pay close attention to Spartacus.
I don't know if it's something you really need to pay a lot of attention to.
I was about to say that it is a show that does not reward attentiveness.
Well, there's a lot of sex, from what I understand.
Yeah. No, there is a lot. Well, as I think I described on the show last year is, you know, all of the sex of softcore pornography and all of the violence of video games in one place.
You know, it's like the ultimate show. It's not really as satisfying
as
it sounds like it should be.
Exactly. And I mean,
satisfying in every possible sense.
No, honestly, it's like the ultimate show for some 14-year-old who, you know, pretends he's asleep and then sneaks down to the rec room to turn on a late showing on Stars. the ultimate show for that 14-year-old, but for real people. That's right, 14-year-olds aren't real people. It offers less. But very tragically, the guy who plays Spartacus got cancer last year. And the thing I really complained about the first season was that it moved the plot forward way too fast. The whole slave rebellion starts by the end of the first season. So there's not really a lot, you know, they don't really build up him in the arena and the politics of Rome. You don't really get a sense of the bigger world before there's already a slave rebellion. And the biggest problem was they killed off John Hannah, who was playing the guy who owned Spartacus. And I was mostly watching for John Hannah, so that, you know, made me considerably less interested in Spartacus Season 2.
Right.
But because Andy, I want to say Whitfield, I don't know his name, got cancer, they still don't know if he's going to be able to be in Season 2 or if they're going to have to recast the part. So this year, instead of doing Season 2, they did a 6 or 8 episode miniseries about John Hannah and Lucy Lawless's characters.
Okay.
And that's what's on this year. And I'm watching it and finding it mildly diverting. And I don't know if it's really worth covering for the show, but it is Sword and Sandals, so it's kind of genre-y.
Well, I don't know if I consider Spartacus Sword and Sandals.
There are both swords and sandals on the show, for the record. Before I hear your rationale, I just want to point that out.
My interpretation is Sword and Sandals, and I don't watch a lot of Sword and Sandals movies
right to
begin with. I'll make that clear right at the start. But my interpretation of the subgenre, I suppose, if you want to call it that, is that these stories don't take place in sort of a real place or a real time.
Oh, okay, so they're just more roughly antiquity stories, whereas this is actually really loosely based on the actual slave uprising that Spartacus was responsible for. Okay.
Yes.
So you consider this to be more of a historical epic than a sword and sandals picture.
That is correct. Okay. Yes.
That is definitely one way of reading it.
Like history porn. Porn history?
History porn suggests that it's, you know, like, porn for, I think it's, you know, like, porn for historians, like, really.
Historical porn?
Yeah, it's not historical porn. That's the Tudors.
Well, so no, I see, I consider Spartacus to be in line, something along the same lines as the Tudors.
It is, and the upcoming The Borgias, which is going to be another, you know, historical.
Yeah, so it's my very strict, you know, definition of
it's not porn. Really so. It's the new genre, historical porn.
Historical porn, yes.
Well, I mean, it is. It's softcore porn, and then there's beheadings. And I actually have a question regarding that, and I'm going to ask you, as somebody who hasn't watched it, for a ruling on this.
Okay.
Okay. Is the success of the show Spartacus due largely, or B, entirely, to the fact that Lucy Lawless is topless every episode?
I would go with entirely.
See, that's why I'm watching, so okay. Yeah. I'm glad it's not just me.
The only other person I ever knew to watch the show was my roommate's brother.
And who was like, Lucy Lawless is topless every episode?
Well, I never heard him talk about Lucy Lawless, but I walked in and I'm watching the show and two people were having sex and then I walked out of the room again. And that, you know, I kind of got everything I needed to know right there.
That really is all you need to know about the show.
And about the people who watch the show.
But this week was kind of a disappointment.
She was topless.
I was not kidding when I said every episode. And this, you know, this is about her character and John Hannah's character, so if anything, she's more topless this year. But anyway, the point I was getting at was that after they worked on Dollhouse for 2 really stellar episodes, maybe 3, and co-created Dr. Horrible with him, everyone was really up on Joss Whedon's brother and sister-in-law, Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancronin. And it's like, what are they going to do next? And this week I found out that when Joss Whedon isn't polishing their scripts, they're kind of just like every other TV writer. Yeah.
Aww.
They wrote this week's, you know, episode of Spartacus, and it was just as nothing special as every other episode of Spartacus. You know, there was none of that Whedon spark that we expect to hear from. So,
right.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. Although I already kind of suspected this, because I read his Dr. Horrible comic that was just kind of depressing.
Jed Whedon?
Yeah, Jed Whedon wrote a Dr. Horrible comic, and it was just really depressing. And it made me not want to hear more from Dr. Horrible.
Oh.
Well, and I'm sure I said this at the time, but yeah, like, without the songs and Neil Patrick Harris, he's just a jerk who wants to hurt people. And I'm like,
that's awful.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't really want to watch a show or read comics about that guy.
Yeah.
You know? He's not winning in print, right. I guess is what I mean. But anyway, let's move right along. I have another question for the Dive Mistress.
Okay.
And, do you watch the show Archer?
I've seen a few episodes of Archer.
I find Archer pretty funny.
I like
Archer. I'm going to say it. I like Archer a lot. It's massively offensive, and it's a good time. I've been reading some reviews of Archer that talk about what a fantastic voice actor H. John Benjamin is. The guy who plays Archer, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you, what do you think constitutes being a good voice actor? Because for me, it's a variety to disappear into a number of different roles.
Right.
Like, it's not just being expressive with your voice. Obviously, that's important. But I would also, you know, say your ability to do different characters. So I would say, like, you know, the fact that Frank Welker is, you know, Freddy from Scooby-Doo, Megatron, and every cute animal you've ever heard on television.
Yeah.
That's impressive voice acting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was gonna use Tara Reid as my example.
Yeah.
Of good voice acting, because she's all over the place and you don't even realize it.
Do you mean Tara Strong?
I get the Taras confused.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure Tara Reid is not a voice actor.
Tara Reid's all over the place and she's horrible. Tara Strong's all over the place and she's good.
No, she's fantastic and you're right. And whereas the thing is, this guy, I was reading this review of this and the other show John Benjamin is on and talk about like what a stellar voice actor he is. But the thing about John Benjamin is, I've seen him on randomly on a bunch of shows, but I watch three shows that he's regularly on. He's Archer, he's the star of Bob's Burgers, and he's on, every now and then he's on Family Guy as the comic book guy nerd character, who, you know, talks about science fiction stuff. And the thing about those three characters are, they all sound exactly the same.
Well, the other, you know, side of the coin.
Yeah.
And voice acting is that, you know, you could be just a really talented voice actor and be able to voice a number of different characters and no one would ever know it's coming from the same person. Or you could be someone like Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, who just has a fantastic
single character and does a fantastic job at that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But the thing is, I wouldn't call Kevin Conroy a fantastic voice actor. I would call him the perfect voice actor to play Batman. Like, I've never heard him do anything else, and I wouldn't want to hear that voice coming out of anybody else, you know?
Well,
he is Batman.
Yeah.
And
it's
he's the perfect
I don't
Batman.
Know. It's weird. It's
no, but it's like, I think H. John Benjamin has a really funny voice, and I think he does a great job, you know, using it for those characters, but, like, so does Stephen Wright, and I wouldn't call Stephen Wright a great voice actor, because every time I hear Stephen Wright in a cartoon, he's just being Stephen Wright.
What about Mark Hamill?
Mark Hamill does do a variety of voices.
Are they all and sound kind well? Of the same?
Okay.
It's
a lot
it's
of the
criticism of Mark Hamill, by the way.
Sorry, and you know what? At some point, I'm just going to start complaining about how Michael Rosenbaum thinks that doing his celebrity impressions counts as new voices. So you know what? Let's just stop this conversation now and recommend people watch Archer, I guess. we're going to leave this one.
And I want to apologize once more to Tara Strong.
I know, for thinking she was Tara Reid.
I'm a fan of her work. I like what she does. I got confused in my head. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, that is one that you really do have to be sorry about. But anyway, I do want to talk about one last thing, and that is how depressing I find television a lot of the time.
Okay.
So, you know, we started watching, sorry, not we. I watched the first episode of American Being Human.
Yeah.
And I was famously ill-impressed.
Yeah.
But the episode ended with a cliffhanger. Because they gave the George character, who again, I'm not learning his American name. They gave the George character a sister, and through a contrived series of events, right, she winds up locked in the werewolf room with him at the end of the first episode. And like, oh my god, is he going to kill her? Or is, you know, or will she somehow miraculously be saved? Right? But we had already seen that he phoned Mitchell. And although Mitchell didn't answer the phone, he left a message. And Mitchell's in the vampire den, but his phone's right there. So what I'm saying is that I didn't think there was any real threat of her dying. And it got me thinking about this show. I don't know if you remember this. It was a few years back. There was the show called Eyes that was about private detectives and starred Tim Daly. And
nope.
No? Okay. Well, why would you? It was not successful. But as part of the plot, in the first episode, right, Tim Daly, Greg Henry, one of my favorite actors, shows up and he's like, I'm an evil, you know, mercenary and I want to buy your private detective agency, Tim Daly. And Tim Daly thinks that he's got a mole at the agency. So he assigns the sleaziest member of the agency to figure out who the mole is. And the sleaziest member of the agency is played by the guy who was in Resident Evil. You know, the cop from Resident Evil.
Where are you going with this?
All right, let me get to the point. At the end of the episode, he's discovered that the mole is Tim Daly's, you know, third in command and best friend, this woman. And because he's a sleazy guy, he's like, now I'm going to blackmail you with this information rather than tell Tim Daly. And her response is to put a gun up to his face and pull the trigger.
Yeah, okay, makes sense.
I know. And I was so excited by that ending because I'm like, oh my god, this seemed like it was just a fun, wacky Private Eye show. But now I realize it's a show where violent things can suddenly happen and there are huge repercussions.
Yeah.
Two actions. And then at the beginning of the second episode, we're like, oh no, she just put the gun near his face. He's fine. It was just a threat. Everything's harmless. Don't worry about it. I'm like, you've just killed the show for me. In the same way, giving George a sister and then immediately having him kill her, like, is such a daring direction for the show to go in. I was almost certain it wasn't going to happen. But I thought, you know what? I would love to see where the show goes if it does happen. So I tuned in for the first minute of the second episode. I tuned in just long enough to confirm my suspicion that this show was never going to go anywhere interesting. And then I turned it off. Yeah, so that is my thoughts about American, I think, because I'm not going to spoil, I can't wait for you to see season two of, you know, Being Human, really, because we're going to have to talk about some stuff that happens. But suffice to say, there are things that happen on that show that are genuinely shocking.
Yes.
And I'm not going to tell you what they are, but it's like, Being Human is not a safe show to watch. And I'm not going to tell you why, but if our viewer has seen season two, our viewer will know exactly what I mean.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not saying nobody's safe ever. You know, one of the characters is a ghost. She can't get killed.
Right.
But at the same time, it is a show where you're never on solid ground. And I like that feeling. And I'm just so sad that there is no, you know, North American show that ever frigging offers that, except for The Wire, which is now off the air.
Yeah, well, I don't know, like, I mean, this is a criticism that's come up numerous times whenever there's a new show coming out. It's like, well, it's probably not going to be as awesome as I think it could be because, for whatever reason, American Network Television is afraid to be violent and surprising and all of that. Like, it just... Yeah.
They never want
almost,
you to feel
it's
that.
It's almost as if they're kind of... It's like they're just incapable of it. Like, it doesn't occur to them that...
Yeah. That this is even a possibility to do something daring and scary and oh my god.
Exactly.
You know, I think you're right. I think it almost, it's like it's a mental block for these people. But anyway, now that we're done complaining about American television, you know, look for the Cape this week on NBC. There's a perfect
Should we move on to complain about American cinema?
I know. Yes, let's. Synopsize away, dive mistress.
Okay. So our first movie tonight is The A-Team. And I wanted to see this when it came out in theaters, and obviously never got to it. So I watched it last week. And here's my synopsis of The A-Team. Hannibal and his crack team of Army Rangers are set up for a crime they didn't commit. After breaking out of prison, they have to clear their names and expose the real villain.
Okay.
That could be like any movie, I know, but, you know, in true A-Team fashion, it involves a lot of explosions and shooting, a car chase or two, some preposterous situations that they have to fight their way out of. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I had a good time watching The A-Team right up until the end. It got a little out of hand at the end.
Yeah, it did. They kind of lost the feel of the movie.
I mean, the whole thing's quite preposterous to begin with, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's a moment at the end, like the, I guess the end game you want to call it, or the final showdown, is just it went a little too far with that one.
Yeah, and I think another problem with the A-Team, and maybe you didn't feel this way, but I certainly did, was I felt it went on a little long. Like...
It is. Well, the whole conspiracy that's going on is needlessly complicated.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a point, and it's very early in the movie, I didn't really know what was going on, and I'm like, this is the A-Team. I shouldn't be having a hard time figuring out what's happening and second-guessing myself. Like, that shouldn't be the problem with this movie.
The A-Team. No, you're absolutely right. It was very convoluted, and I don't think there's a word other than convoluted to really use to describe where the plot goes.
That's definitely the best word for it.
Yeah. And I mean, it all makes sense at the end, but it doesn't need to be as complicated as it is. And likewise, and I remember I did go to see it in theaters because, you know, Liam Neeson as Hannibal. I'm not going to miss that.
Yeah.
But Merman missed it, wound up being busy that night. And I was telling him about it the next day. And so I go to him and I ask, okay, you watched The A-Team? And he's like, yeah, I kind of watched The A-Team when I was growing up in reruns. And so I ask him, at what point would you, someone who knows not a lot, but enough about the A-Team, at what point do you feel a movie about the A-Team, the A-Team story, should start? And he's like, when they're framed for a crime they didn't commit and have to go on the run. Like, okay, what if I told you that the movie has 25 minutes of them getting to know each other before that happens? And his response was that doesn't make sense at all. And I don't think it does make sense. Like,
oh, see, that didn't bother me, the whole how did they meet? I don't know.
I just felt that was like a waste of time. We don't need to know how they meet. Just say they're all in the army together. You know, it's not complicated.
No, I think the elaborate setup was a waste of time.
Okay. So you think like the elaborate setup to them being framed for a crime they didn't commit was... See, I was counting that with the waste of time. I was counting everything up to them actually pulling that job and then being framed as a waste of time.
No, because the meeting was fine because a lot of people who went to see the movie never watched the A-Team, so they don't really know what it is to begin with.
Okay.
So I think having like the meetup, I like that's for the benefit of people who are new to the E-Team.
Okay.
And it is, and I'm not to suggest that isn't filler, because that's totally, you're making up time.
Yeah.
But because the plot is so convoluted, like needlessly so, then the elaborate setup is a big waste of time because the plot itself is very wasteful.
Yeah, that's true. No, that I think that's a fair description.
Yeah.
But, that being said, as preposterous as they are, I did enjoy a lot of the stunts in this movie.
Yes.
Like, did the parachuting tank make any sense if you know anything about reality? No, of course not. But it was a very good visual. I'm relatively certain,
for example, like, that's hilarious.
I know. I'm relatively certain, for example, that tanks don't work underwater. But, you know...
Well, there's such a thing as an amphibious tank, but it just...
That wasn't one of them.
That wasn't one of them.
And I'm relatively certain that landing a tank in water is roughly equivalent to crashing a car into, you know, a brick wall going 100 miles an hour. You know, I don't know how... But you know what? We're not here to talk about the survivability of stunts in the 18.
That's true.
There was nothing as egregious.
I criticized them for trying to fly the tank by firing its cannon.
It was fun. I can't deny that. I'm not going to deny that it was fun. I'm not crazy. No, I mean, it was an entertaining movie, and I think everyone acquitted themselves well, except for Jessica Biel as the world's least plausible army captain.
Yeah, well... You know.
But you know what? You needed something for Bradley Cooper to do in the movie, so they gave him a love interest. Because other than that, he had nothing to do in that movie, and he's the second biggest name. So.
No, see, again, this, you know, wasteful writing.
Oh, it really was.
But that aside, it was still, like, I did really enjoy it, even though sometimes it's quite know what was going on.
Yeah,
and I think you were stupid because it's the A-Team.
Yeah, it should not be that hard to wrap your head around the A-Team. Okay, but I think, like, honestly, I had a good time in the theater. This is one of those movies that I was actually worried, and you seem to have had a good time too. I was worried that this wouldn't play on the small screen.
Yeah, no, it worked out fine.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
I was concerned about that.
Because it's action spectacular, right? And it's best in a movie theater.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe it's just because I was so desperate to watch something escapist and ridiculous that, you know.
That wasn't, you know, bleak and horrible.
Yeah, I was sort of more attuned to something like the A-Team.
The A-Team's, you know, primary message was not that humanity is awful.
Yeah. But no, I still enjoyed myself, and so I think, you know, it'll play well on your television.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
everyone's TV is bigger than my computer.
So yeah, that's true. I should not be worried about that one. All right, so I think we're ready to move on to our second movie, which this is one you had seen a while ago, and I finally got around to watching.
No, this is a movie I'd wanted to see a while ago.
Oh, I thought you saw it when it was in theaters.
No, I really, really wanted to because I read about it and everything, but I just, again, for whatever reason, I just never got the chance.
Okay.
The movie we're talking about is The Host. It's a Korean film that came out, I think, in 2007?
Yeah, 2007.
Okay. So the Park family has to bond together to find their missing family member, 13-year-old Hyun Seo, who's been taken away by a giant monster from the Han River. And getting in the way are the Korean and American governments, who believe that Hyun Seo's father, Gang Do, carries a deadly virus he got from coming into contact with this horrible monster. I mean, there's a lot more going on in this movie than just that. But it is a big monster movie. And it's fantastic.
Oh my god, is it fantastic!
It's so good. As giant monster movies go.
Okay. This is one of these things where it's like so often in giant monster movies, you can, what does it matter about the plot? You can just say, didn't you love that part when Godzilla stepped on the thing? You know? But this one, I honestly had no idea where it was going. And you want to talk about tight writing and excellent grasp of structure. There are so many points in this movie where you're like, I have no idea how they're going to get out of this or how they're going to accomplish what they need to accomplish. It is just a thrill a minute, the movie The Host. You know, it is. I don't want to get too effusive. There are segments of this movie where I'm sitting here on my couch watching it on Netflix, and I'm like, I go edge of my seat. I couldn't believe what was happening. And the monster, and I mean, to move, I think this is one of my favorite, you know, movie monsters in a while.
Yeah. It's like a completely unique creature design for this monster.
Like, it's clearly, it was a fish before it was mutated.
Yes. And you get, at the beginning of the movie, there's this scene that takes place inside of a morgue where the morgue attendant is being ordered to pour formaldehyde down the drain. And we're talking like gallons upon gallons of formaldehyde that this guy has to pour down the drain, which will eventually drain into the Han River. And he registers his concern with his superior, but he's ordered to do it. He doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And that's what leads to the mutation that takes place in this monster that evolves. And it's actually a comment on American. What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, tell me what you mean. Arrogance, American disregard for the countries they occupy?
Yeah, I guess something along those lines, because it's an American who orders the South Korean to pour out all this formaldehyde.
Yeah, I think pointedly that whole scene is in English.
Yes.
Like, it is not an accident that is one of that there are three scenes in this film that are entirely in English, and they're basically all about how Americans do not care about Koreans and are trampling all over them. Yeah, the Americans do not come across well in this movie. Except for one heroic soldier.
It's a harsh comment on America and their policies and the way they treat the countries or the people in the countries that they occupy or where they have a presence even.
Yeah.
There's this whole kind of underlying all that in the last minutes of the film. There's a newscast playing on a TV in the background, and it's very hard to hear what's being said on the newscast because the people in the foreground are having a conversation. But it's sort of it's a debriefing on kind of what happened with the monster and all that, and they blame it on. Or not, they don't blame the monster for anything, but they blame the American response to misinformation.
Yeah.
Disinformation. And it's clearly just a big cover up and a big fat lie. The Americans once again exploited the Koreans for an opportunity to test a weapon that they'd been developing.
Yeah, they claim to have a weapon that can destroy all biological agents. Without, you know, killing all of the people who live there, too. Right. But, yeah, and just that was a nice one. That was a nice twist. I didn't see that coming right away, although I guess I should have, because, you know, Americans are scumbags in this movie. But, yeah, like...
Aside from all that, aside from the political commentary that's taking place in this movie,
yeah,
you have the story of this family that has to rescue their daughter from this horrible monster.
And yeah, I was not, and this is it's the fault of us for watching so many North American movies. We don't, when you watch an Asian movie, I guess you're not, if you're only familiar with North American structure and tenets and tropes, you're not expecting it to vary so massively from comedy to thriller to drama to flat out horror. because they are not shy about demonstrating what a disgusting monster this is.
No, like, they're real, like, you're right, it's all over the board. Like, the movie is very funny at times, and funny in times where you would expect a really sort of heart-wrenching moment to happen.
Yeah.
And they go for broad comedy. And it's just, it's weird. Like, it is, it's a strange experience if you're just not used to it.
Can I just quickly shout out the masterful direction? And I will use the term masterful here. Because, okay, honestly, I'm not saying this film made up for, completely made up for Cloverfield. Because nothing could. Cloverfield is just awful. But this is a film about regular, everyday people's response to a monster attack, and at the broadest of strokes, it is about people running towards the monster when they should be running away from it because they want to save someone's life. Yeah. So, I mean, in the broadest of strokes, it has the same plot as Cloverfield. But the way the monster is handled in this, the fact that they have no fear of showing you the monster because they know it won't stop being scary, and it never does.
Yeah.
I mean, the confidence it takes to do that alone impressed me. But the way the monster is first presented as this curiosity that quickly turns to terror felt
very very quickly, I might add. That very is a quickly. Fantastic moment, by the way.
Where it's just like, what so do you do? Yeah. Where it's just this thing hanging from a bridge. You're like, that's so weird. Do we feed it? Like, we don't know how to respond to this thing. And then when it comes charging at people, it is the most terrifying thing I've seen in a film in years. It is so, and it's so effectively done because it's so, everything leading up to that moment feels exactly like this is how people would respond.
Yeah, that's what I would be like. What the fuck is
I
want to
get a picture of this. Maybe I should throw in some food. What is that thing? And then, because it feels so completely grounded in reality up until that moment, when it starts attacking, you believe everyone's response to that as well.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And God, is it terrifying.
And disgusting.
Oh, God, is it disgusting.
It's so gross.
It really is. Like, and I mean, it's not a spoiler alert to say that the monster's eyes are bigger than its stomach. So its habit is to swallow a bunch of people, and then while it's digesting them, grab more in its mouth, and then drop those people in a little hovel so it can come back and eat the corpses later.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's accurate to how some actual animal behaves, but I had never seen anything that disgusting from a monster in a movie before.
No, that was quite gross. And then you find out what happens after the monster eats the people.
Yeah.
That's really gross, too.
And again, I thought I had seen as gross as the film was going to deliver, but let's just say it can't digest all of the people and leave it at that. I'm getting chills thinking about this, but yeah, this is one of the most unqualified recommendations. I understand why it's one of the most popular films in Korean history. Like, it is just amazing and heart-wrenching and heartwarming and just such an incredible ride.
It really is.
Oh,
it really is a fantastic movie.
And it's like, it's one of those movies, and I don't want this to become a statement about America as it always does, but when you think of just, like, the bloated, overwrought, pretentious crap we get as disaster movies in America.
I like those movies.
I know you do, but none of them can hold a candle to The Host.
No, it's a very different kind of movie.
No, but what I'm saying is, why can't America make this kind of movie? America needs to be able to make this kind of movie.
I'm going
to
refrain from comment.
Exactly. Like, we're not going to make this a debate about the validity of liking the Transformers, okay?
I don't get kicked out of the country just yet.
But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, and the thing is, because it's not like this is a small budget movie.
No, this is a huge, big,
it's
big budget.
It's a huge, big budget movie, and it still has this really authentic heart.
Right.
You know, it hasn't completely lost that in the effects or the large scope, you know? And so, yeah, I'm now running out of nice things to say about this movie.
How could you run out of nice
Actually,
things?
Actually, yeah, it would be hard. It is that good. Before we just start repeating ourselves, I think we should move on to our third film of the evening.
Okay, all right.
Oldest film.
Okay, the third film of the evening is actually a third film in a trilogy of sorts.
Yeah.
And this is the Quatermass conclusion. And if you'll recall, we covered the first two Quatermass movies a little while ago. And bear with me now. This is going to take a while. So, society has kind of collapsed, sort of. But it would appear that, I guess, the government is trying to carry on like nothing's really changed. Or industry, for that matter, too. And there's this sort of joint U.S.-Russian space program that's underway. This was made in 78, I should point that out.
Yeah.
But then something goes terribly wrong on the space station, and everyone dies. And Quatermass, who was asked to appear on a TV show covering the sort of moment in space, uses this opportunity to first criticize the space initiative and then to plead with the public to help him find his granddaughter, who has run away from home. And the Quatermass travels to the countryside with another scientist. I learns about this other scientist's sort of ongoing listening project, where he uses these two big satellite dishes to listen to space, and the dishes picked up a signal at the same time as the disastrous space docking, and the two incidents appear to be linked. Meanwhile, Earth's youth are acting strangely as teens and young adults all over the world are joining this kind of weird hippie cult.
The planet people.
They call themselves the Planet People, and they believe they're going to be taken away to another planet. And when the Planet People gather in large numbers, they're killed by this light from outer space. And so it's up to Quatermass to figure out how to save the planet from losing all of its young people. And that's kind of
what this is about.
What this movie is about? It's really hard to synopsize.
It really is. And I think one of the things that fascinated me about this movie is that unlike the first two Quatermasses, all three of these projects were BBC miniseries by brilliant sci-fi writer Nigel Neal. But the difference between the first two, the Quatermass Experiment and the Quatermass and the Pit, is that those were film adaptations of the miniseries. But this movie is just an edited down version of the miniseries.
Yeah.
Into 2 feet. So a four hour miniseries has been turned into a 2 hour movie. So I'm sure there's actually a lot more plot we were missing that now I want to track down and see based on this. But this film is, okay, it's an unbelievable downer.
But it's not, it's a downer, but it's not nearly, I don't know, this is going to sound like a total contradiction in terms. It's a downer movie, but it's not nearly as nihilistic or pessimistic.
Yeah.
As you would think a downer movie would be.
That's true. No, it is, it's weirdly hopeful. But the thing that I loved about it was the idea that has continued from Quatermass in the Pit, and it is a Lovecraft kind of idea, which is that humans are in no way, shape, or form, like, they don't know why they're here, and they're in no way prepared to deal with what's coming for them. Because the aliens in this, and, you know, this is a bit of a spoiler alert, but we never see an alien in this movie.
No.
Never. And we never get a complete picture of why the aliens are doing what they're doing. But yeah, the tiny pieces and the little theories we get are so abjectly terrifying. Because the Dive Mistresses has said that the humans are killed, but that's not entirely accurate.
We don't really... It's hard to know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, because the film is very oblique about what exactly is happening. Like, we see someone who is partially hit by one of these beams. And they seem to have been burned by it. And there seems to be ash where some people in the area were killed, but there's not enough material for all of the people to have been killed. The planet people believe that they're being teleported away by, you know, benevolent aliens. And while you can clearly interpret that they are being teleported away, there is no reason to believe that it is a benevolent intellect doing it. And
see, my interpretation is that they are, in fact, just, they're killed.
Maybe.
And you can argue either side. It's not really important what happens to them. Is that they're no longer on Earth.
That's true.
And you see this one survivor, she's undergoing, there's some kind of weird change taking place to her body. And you see what happens to her.
Yeah.
And terrifying.
Oh my god, is it terrifying?
It's weird. It's like it's incomprehensible, and it's like we can't understand.
Yeah, and there last year Torchwood, or maybe I guess 2 years ago now, a year and a half, Torchwood did a miniseries. Oh, you're familiar with Torchwood, right? The Doctor Who spinoff?
I know what it is, but I never watched it.
They did a spinoff that was I would say partially inspired by this. And I mean, I didn't know that at the time. Now that I've seen this, I get it. But I thought it was pretty terrifying because some aliens show up and demand 10% of the Earth's children.
Right.
Which is a pretty scary idea.
Yeah.
But the fact that the show is open with the explanation that the aliens use the human children as a way to produce drugs a la the movie I Come in Peace. Mm-hmm. So they turn the human children, they turn off their ability to age and lock them in chambers where they just exist forever as little machines to constantly produce endorphins that the aliens use to get high. And that's creepy and disgusting. But it is not as object, but it is a motive that we can wrap our head around.
Right.
And it is less abjectly terrifying as the motive of the aliens in the source material, which is completely unknowable.
Yes.
And the steps that are taken to defeat the aliens on Torchwood in no way compare to what they suggest humanity does to stop the aliens in this movie. Because I am coming nowhere near spoiling the ending of this thing. But I cannot remember the last time I felt so wrenched.
Yeah.
As I did by the last 5 minutes of this movie. It is a wrenching, harrowing experience watching the end of the Quatermass conclusion. And yes, they do not mean that title metaphorically. And that is as close as I will come to spoiling it. Oh,
but no,
wow.
It's a great, great movie. And I suppose you probably, if you watch this series, maybe get a better feel for the change that takes place in the character.
Yeah.
Of Quatermass, because he, like, the Quatermass in this movie is very different from the Quatermass in Quatermass in the Pit, who was a very different Quatermass from the Quatermass experiment.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that he started out so arrogant about humanity's place in the universe.
Yeah.
You know, and then he finds out this terrifying thing about, you know, Martians seeding humanity for a reason, and he starts to get, well, shaken by the events of that. And for this film to be him, to have him exposed to the idea of humanity being just looked at as another natural resource of Earth. Wow, that one really hits him. So yeah, it's an interesting character, and you're right, he really does, even though the three films were made by, you know, different groups of people, all based on Nigel Neal's scripts, there really is a lot of growth to this character, and he really is an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the kind of brainy, idea-based sci-fi that does not exist in America, but... Yeah. I mean, except for the movie Primer, there's basically no idea-based sci-fi in America. But the film Primer has completely botches its attempt at a human element. They're utter ciphers, and I think that's the genius of the Quatermass series, is that it's really brainy idea-based sci-fi without ever losing the human element and the character element.
Yeah.
So
I'll
yeah.
also say this. I really... And I liked this in the second movie as well, is that, you know, I guess sort of tangentially, that when you're talking about the human element, is that they sort of, they make a point of including human history and archaeology.
Yeah.
Like within the dialogue, I suppose, if you want to be really arrogant about it. Or intellectual about things.
Yeah.
And so they really use that to good effect.
Yeah.
To sort of make it, or to kind of, I guess, drive home the point that this is something that's been going on for so, you know, for millions of years. And in that way, it's something that we really, like, we don't know anything about our species, really, even though we think that we do. And just to kind of, and it kind of helps, I'm sort of losing my words here, but it helps to instill in the viewer, I suppose, a sense that, like, we're really, like, you know, in sort of this, you know, universal or cosmic scope of things, like, we're really tiny and inconsequential. And I think that really kind of, like, all of Quatermass sort
has
of
used that theme, absolutely.
Has sort of used that theme of building on that.
I think one of the things that I loved most about this is the flat-out terrifying idea that what if the opinion among young people that they can get together and have an understanding and have, you know, peace in our time and all that, what if that idea is put into their minds and being used as bait just as surely as deer pheromones are used to make a prize buck think that a doe in heat is near the place where it's going to get shot. I think that's a terrifying idea, and this is a film that is full of terrifying ideas, yeah. Just like that one.
Well, it's manipulation.
Exactly. Oh,
that's
my God.
Like,
but yeah.
I guess it's like at the heart of it, that's kind of what this movie is about, manipulation.
Yep. Oh, it's such a great experience. An amazing wrap up to the franchise. Just, we've covered all of them now, and that kind of ticks me off a little, because I wish there were more of these to watch, but unless we can track down the miniseries, this will be the end of the AVOD watching Quatermass. And trust me when I say that's a tragedy, and it's also a tragedy if you don't track it down and watch it yourself.
Wow, I don't want, we're ending the show on a tragic note.
I know, well, it's not a tragedy, because maybe our viewer hasn't seen it yet, so it's it's a tragedy if they don't, if our viewer doesn't do
doesn't.
It.
Okay.
So really, come on, watch these movies. Absolutely watch these movies. Alright, so I think we can move there from there to Narcissism Watch. It is a perfect time to segue out. The count being over.
Tragedies. I don't have any. So much.
Whereas I have managed to keep another week going without stopping my one a day, so there are 7 new articles up at Castle of Argelon.
Wow.
I know. This is
like
so unlike
real articles or for fake articles.
I don't even know what you mean by that. So I don't know.
Like not just you're posting, hello, this is my post for today.
No.
Hi.
No, the once a week I post that there is a new AVOD, but that is the only low content post I do.
Okay.
The rest of them are full content posts. For example, on Saturday I posted my How to Ruin Your Own Movie about Jennifer's Body.
Right.
On, you know, the, I have a new greatest comic book panel every week. I have a Tales from the Dark Side and a Criminal Minds every week. And then just one, two random articles about movies I watched. So, you know, I'm keeping it going. This Saturday, or maybe it's this Thursday, I don't. Actually, I think it's this Thursday, I explain to anyone who didn't watch it, which based on the ratings is most people, that the show The Cape is unconcerned with even basic narrative coherence.
Something to look forward to.
Oh, absolutely. And not in a good, you know, French experimental film way. I want to make that clear. When I say it, it is not at all coherent. That's supposed to be an insult. So don't think I like The Cape, I guess, is what I'm trying to get across.
No, I think we're all very clear on your feelings
about the Cape. About the Cape and his arch nemesis, Chess.
Anyway, I've got poll results.
Oh, I love poll results. What are they?
Well, last week's poll question was, well, I guess it was more of a fill in the, or complete this statement. and it was Jennifer's Body is ... The vote, it's unanimous. Jennifer's Body is stupid. 100% of you agree.
Oh, thank you so much, viewer, because we were all on the same page this time. Wow.
So be sure to swing by the AVODs blog at theavod.blogspot.com to vote in this week's poll. I can't tell you what it is, because I don't know yet.
You've got a day. You figure it out.
But it'll be great. It'll be great, and we're really... really eager to know your thoughts.
Oh my god, it's terrible. But anyway, as always, I'm going to want to thank you for watching right now, and until next time, I'm Cam Vargelon.
I'm the Dive Mistress.
And we'll see you back here. Have a great night.
Good night.